Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Javier, we have a pay-per-view coming up and a world title three-way match, which AEW at the top of the second hour promoted tonight on Dynamite with Samoa Joe coming out, and then Swerve, and then Hangman following up on last week. It was kind of paint by the numbers based on where the characters are. Joe is the established, arrogant, ultra-confident, heelish champion. Swerve Strickland, the up-and-comer, still with a heel manager who interferes illegally on Collision, but is an adorable hype man who dances with him on Dynamite, saying he's going to, you know, rise to the top here at this pay-per-view. And then Hangman Page coming out and kind of continuing to evolve and define his character. How do you grade the job that they did building up to this pay-per-view coming up in a couple weeks?
Overall, it was good. I thought that the Swerve promo was fire, as the kids would say. I liked the Joe for the most part. Probably not his best ever, but, you know, that's a high bar.
It wasn't by design. It was just
– yeah.
Like, I don't think it aspired to be his best ever, but did you think there was anything wrong with what he had tried to do?
No. Just not his best.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know. You could tell that he was holding back to give because it seems like this was to give Swerve the actual limelight. A little weaker on the weak on the Hangman part of the equation, just because you know, the logic, even if it's villain logic, and he's like, you know, which is what they're going for with him, that, oh well, he didn't beat me, but I mean, he was, I think, third, second, not first. So, like, you know, even for unhinged logic, it was a little bit too unhinged for me. Kind of like we just want to give him, like, some sort of reason for him to be complaining and stuff. Definitely feels like they're leading full into the heelish with him. And I do like Samoa Joe. I know, speaking to some of us who call, you know, who don't want to see triple threat match titles to the triple threat matches. I like that he got the mic drop at the end, saying that, you know, you're not going to pin him and you're not going to pin him. You're going to have, if you want this, you're going to have to go through me. I like that. So overall, you know, it was just another stepping stone towards the pay-per-view.
Did what happened last week and the explanation this week ultimately make sense with Joe going, well, they can't be, neither guy can win within 30 minutes. My logic says I shouldn't have to defend against either of them. And then something having to do with the rankings that Joe created and Hangman's win and loss record. And I still,
how many weeks do you still have? redo the match again without
a point.
With no time limit. Rock, paper, scissors, flip a coin. I don't know. Find a way. So yeah, we definitely are having to set aside real world logic for what's wrestling logic, you know? So, but yeah, it's not ideal in that way, but yeah.
Are you okay with the ranking system as it's been rolled out again?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So explain why.
Well, okay, so I actually have it called up right now, because when I heard about the, you know, ranking system, I went on when they said it was up live, and the first thing that struck out to me and would knock me out was, okay, I have a picture here of Samoa Joe, Christian Cage, Orange Cassidy, Eddie Kingston, next to it, Swerve Strickland, Hangman Page, Adam Copeland, John Moxley, and Konosuke Takeshita's names on the list. And I have to ask the following questions. Okay, number one, who's the number one guy on this? Because you're showing me four champions. Which is your top guy? You know, because the others are the contenders. So of these champions, who's your number one guy? And if let's say your number one guy is Samoa Joe, which is what we're led to believe. So where does that put Christian Cage? Is he your number two guy because he's a champion and he's not on that list? And if he's the number two guy, why isn't he going after the number one guy? Okay, he's a heel. Maybe it's like he's fine having a secondary belt because, hey, you know, it means more money. But what we're looking at here is Swerve is actually the fifth guy And Adam Copeland is the eighth guy if your champions are the top guys. So, you know, Copeland's the eighth. Why is the eighth guy then wrestling for the second guy? I mean, it's just it those are just some of the questions you ask. Otherwise, the only thing what I would have liked to have seen, divide them into categories. So you have the people who are only challengers for the for Samoa Joe's title, people who are like only in the TNT Orange Cassidy has, and the Eddie Kingston one. So just have them separately would make more sense, because even looking down this, okay, I'm looking at the fifth guy, Konosuke Takeshita. He's the only one who does not have an obvious dance partner, so that makes me think that either he's going to wrestle one of these guys for, you know, like on a Dynamite at some point. But his name is too big, so I think he's going to be the next real challenger. So I'm like, okay, so Konosuke Takeshita is the only other person here. I should be able to look and see a list of people who are like people. I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see this guy. I could see this guy go after Joe. I could see this guy go, you know, I could see Konosuke Takeshita against Joe. That sounds like a good idea. Or Brian Danielson, or, yeah, you know, Castagnoli, you know, because those would be in the top five if you were to separate it into multiple different brackets, but they don't. So it's obviously just there for shortcuts, for, you know, like, you know, already you've already used it. You had a, you know, last week you had the draw. So you're going to use it as a shortcut to get a triple threat. You used it with the Copeland match that you had, the Copeland and Garcia, where Christian interfered basically so that Copeland doesn't become the number one contender. How does that work? He's already number three. Is it to prevent, because in the commentary, they said, oh, it's to prevent Garcia. So, like, is he really threatened by Garcia? Like, right now? I'm not really.
Yeah.
It's a mess. They're not. It's for shortcuts, and it could be. I'm not immediately negative towards the idea of having some sort of ranking system, preferably internally and not, you know, on a web page. But you know, it's just. It feels like the whole point of it is to A, you know, in a way fill in the promise of we're going to become more sports-like because this is what sports do, and yeah, B, to be lazy, you know, to have a lazy way to get to these matches. As bad as some of the matchups and stuff that was going on when they didn't have the rankings, at least they had to do the work to get the story there, and then we complained about the story. Some of the stories were good. That's not the fault of how you were booking. That was just the fault on the specific thing. So yeah, I'm very negative. I mean, from day one, I was like,
yeah,
you know, the way, because of the way they were going to handle it, not necessarily because I'm like, you know, against the system altogether.
Well, I know we got a ways to go hype in terms of a little bit of ways to go, not a lot yet, or not a lot anymore, but what do you think they're pointing us in any direction in terms of who wins the world title match? And who do you prefer? Do you think Swerve is ready and you strike while you can? Do you think it's better to have a chase and have Hangman win? Do you think Joe retains so that Joe can actually end up being the one who drops the title to Will Ospreay or Okada or someone else? What path do you think they're on, and what path do you think they should be on?
Yeah, I think anytime you have a championship decided in a multi-man match, and it's not one, you know, I can understand on a lower one, you don't want to pin your champion because he's going to move up to a higher championship. With that one exception, I don't like your main championship changing hands on a multi-man match unless it's elimination. That's the only case. I don't like the idea of somebody, you know, because, like, you know, Joe brought it up. One of you think you're going to, you know, Hangman, you think you're going to pin Swerve. Swerve, you think you're going to pin him. And then that's how you're going to get the title. But no, you know, I'm going to kick both your asses. You know, so that, you know, that kind of, you know, I mean, if you think about it, the moment you have a triple threat match where the one pin wins, the champion's no longer the champion at that point. Because, you know, he's not defending anything at that point. Now he's just trying to win it back. Like, same thing when you – I mean, it makes sense. The ladder matches only ever made sense when you had a dispute, like, who's the real champion? You know, because at that point, okay, you remove the two. And, you know, but like, yeah, I just don't like the – so if you're going to book a triple threat just to get past the pay-per-view and give a good show, I think Samoa Joe needs to come out of this. I don't, and I especially don't like the idea of him, you know, because then he's like, what, a transitional champion? The only side of that is if that happens, chances are things between Swerve and Hangman continue, and that's getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see that feud continue past this. You know, but I can't, you know, so I would prefer to see Joe. I think Swerve has a good chance, though, because, you know, if he wants to ride the hot hand, I would actually rather Joe come out of this and then continue the feud with Swerve as a solo thing, and then went and then Swerve went against Samoa Joe solo.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Sounds good. Well, let's pause and introduce the show, introduce ourselves, and then get on to other segments on the show and calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Wednesday, February 14th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, pwtorch.com, the website, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller podcast and post shows. Tomorrow, the flagship will feature Todd Martin. So check that out. That'll be a we'll have a lot to talk about with Todd, about the happenings since the press conference last week for WrestleMania. And we always invite you to listen up to our Blue Logo show every week, not only to our new shows, but also our flashback interviews and flashback flagships from 5 to 10 years ago. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe. And while you're at it, if you're streaming the show, subscribe to this also. It's our Red Logo show. The other voice you hear is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor, including pay-per-view previews and predictions. Javier, welcome back. We haven't talked in 2024, I don't think, so Happy New Year.
I think we did. I think we did a show in January. I think it was a Collision, like early January.
Oh, that's right. Yep, I was forgetting about Collision when I was thinking about us doing a show. Well, then I take that back.
That's okay.
It's ridiculous to say Happy New Year. Who would do that?
Collision is very forgettable, so I understand that.
And preempted.
And yeah, so yeah, but happy Valentine's Day. You knew exactly who to call for today. I'm so lonely.
I'm doing my job, Javier, bringing on the best co-host I can, regardless of the day or the holiday. All right, so everybody listening, give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We might be hearing from an on-site correspondent. Also, as the show progresses here, not guaranteed, just depends on the timing of things. All right, so let's bring Larry from Bridgetown, Illinois on to talk about the show tonight. Larry, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hi, thanks for taking the call as always. Well, a couple of different things. I guess we could start off with the fact that I'm finally sold on what they're doing with the Young Bucks. It took me just a little bit, but I really like what they've done and how they've been presented, and they're presenting themselves the last couple of weeks, first off.
Yeah, well, Javier, I want to get your take. I haven't talked to you about the new Young Bucks gimmick, the EVPs. They wore the bloodied white suits. They came out to a new Sopranos knockoff theme song tonight and defeated Top Flight. And then, as EVPs, flexed their power to fine, suspend, matchmake by begging Darby Allin to give them a tag team title match. I didn't quite get the logic of that, speaking of the rankings not necessarily making sense. But what do you think of what Larry said? Have you been sold from the beginning? Are you sold yet? Did tonight help or hurt?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. It's not, I don't think it's like top, you know, level stuff. But it's you know, it's more than what they had that was where they were floundering. As long as they continue, if you know, as long as they continue like the way they're going, and they've done, you know, I got to give them thumbs up for the bloody clothes that they continue wearing, because that's just like, you know, such scumbaggery right there. And if you really, 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 really want to get a heel over, have them threaten Tony Schiavone, which is what they did today. So I think, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're like main. It's not a main event story for me, but it's fine for being like the second, third story on the card, and you're going to get a, you know, I mean, setting aside act, let me phrase that, not the story, because, you know, this does have the Sting's retirement, but in terms of the act that the Bucks are, I'm not going to say like in a main event of pay-per-view, but.
Yes. All right. I my issue, as I expressed early on, is just not defining the EVP. And you know, they're kind of playing in the meta sense. Oh, yeah, you guys are the founders. But I did like Darby bringing up, hey, you guys started with a vision, and then last year you said, oh, you resigned because of a light travel schedule and the money. It's not exactly inspirational. And then he referenced, the old Cody, not by name, but the crowd picked up on it and chanted his name. So the gimmick of the Bucks, I guess, is that they want light schedules and a lot of money to phone it in, and their EVPs who have lost the spirit of what AEW was launched, the spirit of AEW's launch and what it was supposed to stand for. Is that too meta, or can that run parallel alongside the just more over-the-top, you know, heelish personas that make fans just want to see them get beat up? Javier.
It does cross a bit into two meta today. I mean, first off, when they brought up, Darby brought up Cody, I'm like, you are playing with fire, man. Because Cody is the hottest thing going right now. And I don't think it's a good idea to contrast what you got on your show to, again, the hottest thing going right now. That's one thing. It does. As far as like what they're talking about, I'm of two minds. I do like the idea that they're playing into them being EVP, you know, D-bags backstage, because a certain part of the audience who would be the Punk loyalists would, you know, that's the way that they're going to view them. That's pretty much the way you're going to view them. So if you continue with them as baby faces, you're kind of like asking the crowd to still split the two. You're going to end up with split crowds, if I could actually put my words in correct language. So I do like that idea of it. But then bringing up that the lazy and they signed with AEW because they had to work less, and then bring up that you signed all your friends kind of stuff, early in the company, like... Yes, but also you have to build out your roster over time, and these were bodies, and as soon as you had replacement for them, you know, maybe that was just all Tony Khan, and the Young Bucks fought it tooth and nail, but in any, you know, but you can understand why you want to give your buddies a place, but I don't like that level of reality. So, like I said, I'm of two minds on it.
All right, well, let's go back to Larry. Larry, elaborate on why you were a little skeptical at the beginning, and how you what brought you more to their side now, and how you feel about what Javier and I had to say about this.
Well, I think Javier, I'm in almost complete agreement with Javier that I like it, but I'm not, you know, the main event. This is superstar stuff, but I'm finally sold on it. I think finally had to be sold on it more was, you know, the last couple of, the video, vignettes, whatever you want to call it, that they did, and some of their actions tonight. And again, like I was with Toni Storm, you know, they seem to be kind of into it. You can tell Toni Storm's into it, and I think that the Jacksons are into this, and I think it's coming across a little bit better on screen to me as a fan than some of the stuff they've done in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm on board. I think they needed to do something. There's aspects of this I'm not crazy about, but I think they're going to be effective at fans wanting to see them get beat up by people like Darby and Sting, who they like, and that's the job of a heel. And we can parse whether the overall approach makes a ton of sense. Like I said, I think the EVP thing, I would just be content not with them never bringing that up. I don't think it really is a TV storyline that works in the narrative structure of the show. They don't really explain it, but they also don't explain their rankings very well and other aspects of the rules and stuff. So that they're not sticklers when it comes to that. So obviously that's not it's not an oversight on their part as much as just kind of part of the brand, and they just don't think that kind of thing's important as long as the result is fans booing and reacting the way they want it. I think they will, you know, and I'm just glad Matt and Nick have something to do on a regular basis on AW TV, and I think these characters are going to be good opposite of Sting in his retirement match. Javier, did you like that matchup ultimately for Sting?
Yeah, I mean that's I mean it'll be a fun, exciting match, and I mean I'm sure Sting is gonna put his all into it. And I am a little bit concerned what crazy stuff he's gonna do. But yeah, I mean it's good. I mean Sting's been around for so long; it's not like there's anyone who's still wrestling that you'd want to see him, you know, wrestle for the most part. A Darby Sting match would be interesting on a 1-on-1, but if he's not going to do a 1-on-1, then this is fine.
Yeah. All right, Larry, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
I want to bring up the Tony Storm film. Maybe a comment and a question. I think it was presented well. To me, it kind of gives you both the delusional side of Tony's character talking about, you know, Japan. It's like her history of the relationship with her and Perrazzo, but her warping the history. And the question I have for you guys on not so much Tony, but more Deanna is, does Deanna come off more as a natural heel that like she might be just a little miscast in being the semi, you know, good guy in this role? And I'm not knocking anyone on, it's just something I kind of see as a wrestling fan on it.
Javier, what do you think on that?
Perez has a bit of a deficiency when she's on the mic, and I think that it helps, like, it does kind of, like, make you go towards the she exudes heelishness, you know? So I do agree that when you first see her, but then as you see her wrestle, she's one of those wrestlers that her body of work would then babyface her to a crowd. So it's not the best of ideas to bring Perrazzo in as a babyface at first to a crowd that doesn't know her. And I think I think they might be hoping that more people know Deanna Perrazzo, more AEW fans know Deanna Perrazzo out of Impact. So you can tell, like, she didn't cut a promo today. She just had to go rely to the old standby, you know, B word at the end.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. You could tell that, you know, when you go there, you're like, okay, yeah, we're not doing much here. But she's one where, like, it's the body of work, Arn Anderson was somebody that, when, you know, took a while for me to, you know, really warm up to when I started realizing that, you know, what a guy, or even better, Stone Cold, you know, cause, when he was Steve Austin in WCW, I saw the work that he was doing and I appreciated that. And then when he cut that promo in, ECW, was it, I'm like, oh wow, there's something here. Deanna's kind of that kind of thing that you appreciate the work over a long period of time and then becomes a babyface.
Very good. I was going to criticize her for closing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just ain't calling someone a bitch. It's just like, come on. Do you watch wrestling? Do you understand how overplayed that word is, especially amongst the women, and how it's not shocking? It's just,
We can say a lot more words now on AEW. We've seen, so, you know.
It's just so damn cliche. I don't know. Anyway, I get what you're saying, Larry. Tony is – people like Tony. You know, I mean, they're going to cheer her, and it's a tough spot to be a babyface against her. But from a landing play standpoint, maybe Perrazzo would gain some natural – it'd be more natural for her to show some personality if she got to be heel, because it can be easier to be heel than an interesting babyface. Larry, what else for us?
This one's for Javier. You mentioned the ECW Stone Cold interview. I'll just ask him really quick. Are you talking about the one where he described how he was fired in Japan and he did the voice impressions of Dusty and Hogan?
I don't remember which one precisely. I just remember that it was a fiery – that might have been it, because it was a fiery, you know – promo that he cut, and I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Then he disappeared, and I saw him then again in as the ringmaster. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is this the same Stone Cold? Or not Stone Cold, obviously, because that wasn't his name. Is this the same Steve Austin? And I'm like, no, it's not the same Steve Austin when I saw the ringmaster. And it took a while before. So, I mean, that's the thing. It was like I didn't put two and two together, because I remember I was a lot younger when this happened. I didn't put the two and two together until it was like, you know, oh, wait a minute. This is the same guy I liked in all the – who is this the same guy who did all the work in the those war game matches.
Good way to put it. Larry, what else?
I think that'd be about it for what I wanted to, you know, discuss and ask you two about. And you probably got a bunch of people lined up. You said you might have some on-the-spot correspondence, and I will just, you know, I'll just let you guys get to it and listen to the rest of the show.
Larry.
And so long from the land of Lincoln.
Well, I hate to talk after your sign-off, but I want to pull you on if you liked the main event. Did it work for you?
It may have worked if they would have done something more to hype it maybe in the week or 2 weeks before, if that makes any sense. It just
or the hour and
like
45 minutes before.
Yeah, just kind of like a thrown out. Yeah, especially with that. It's just kind of a thrown out, oh, here's our main event, instead of, you know, build it up to where, hey, I want to see this. Give them time to make me want to watch it instead of, oh, well, that's there.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks, Larry. Enjoy your week.
All right, thanks. Right.
Thanks for calling. Yep. All right, let's go to Greg in Waterloo, Iowa next, and you can give us a call also still, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call if you want to be on the show. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
First one will be I agree with you about the rankings. I just think that it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of messy ever since they've been reintroduced. So maybe, I don't know what kind of fine-tuning could be done on that, but I am of the opinion that it's a bit messier than it needs to be. Also, my second point, I've got one more after this. I know there's a feud going on. I know they've been building for it, but I'm kind of still confused as to how we went from the revealing of the devil target and the revelation, the mission statement of trying to get the AEW world title and the trios titles to now Orange Cassidy and enough of a blood feud where he has a Texas death match with the fifth most important member of the group. I must have missed something to where we got something got really convoluted, I think, in the mission statement of Undisputed Kingdom, and I'm kind of confused by that.
Yeah, Javier, what do you think about what Greg said? And also just what do you think of Undisputed Kingdom's presentation so far? Like on a 1 to 10 scale, how are they doing?
Have they really been presented? I mean, a lot of this has been happening on other shows. It's not Dynamite, which is what I pay the most closest attention to. So I was actually thinking about that earlier today. It was like, you know, the Undisputed Kingdom was supposed to be what toppled the devil, and they were supposed to be a force. And here they are on, doing other stuff. And then at the same time, which would have been fine if you had the bring somebody else in here, the Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaimed, it would have made, you know, they unite because of over what the Undisputed Kingdom did to them. And why are they not going after them? You know, it's like, we're going to unite because, you know, it turns out you need to have numbers. And I'm like, hey, you have numbers. Go after the enemies that convince you to get these numbers. Oh, we're going to have a 12-man match on was it Rampage or Collision? I forget which one. So it's like, it just – the stuff that was going on was so bad at that point that – I'm fine with just forgetting about it and just letting it go. And then maybe if you could do something with the Kingdom, you can. If not, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I don't think many people, when they think of a reason to watch AEW, are thinking of Undisputed Kingdom right now. And did Adam Cole say anything on color commentary, by the way, for Wardlow?
No.
Was that the bit?
I think that was the bit. Maybe he was upset. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was upset that people have been comparing what he's doing now to what Vince wanted him to do.
Well, that was me. That was me.
Well, sorry, if
I upset him.
Well, not just you. I mean, because that was going around. Everybody was talking
about that. I don't.
But, yeah, I mean, it is, you know, maybe that was kind of like a middle finger to that. Maybe they said, it's Valentine's Day and you're calling me in for this? Yeah. You know, I'm just not going to say anything, and they just made it into a bit. I mean, I just, you know, but yeah, it was what it was.
Yeah. Greg, back.
Sadly, I found myself saying a lot with AEW lately.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Greg, back to you.
Yeah, and I appreciate the effort that was put forth in the main event between Orange Cassidy and Matt Taven, but I'm also kind of lost as to why. What, as I said, like the feud and like why it would require to have a Texas death match with thumbtacks and that ridiculously insane, you know, over the top spot that Matt Taven took from the diving from the ring through that table. I mean, I don't know why it required all that. You know, I appreciate the effort, but you know, it's like I don't think this was a time for all of that to be, you know, for all of that to be. For all that to be happening in a match on television between what I don't really think is a blood feud, but I digress. And then I'll go to my other point is that the conversation you mentioned, Diana and Tony Storm earlier, and I noticed watching on Saturday on Collision, Diana Perrazzo had a match with Kiera Hogan. She's just so heelish, like her mannerisms and her body language. She just comes off as such a heel, and I'm not sure what the roles are supposed to be because, you know, this Tony Storm character, like, it's really not a heelish character. I mean, like, you know, everybody likes her, and it's a very comedic character. I think it's kind of hard to make heels out of you know, comedy characters. They're largely comedy, and they're trying to get into a more serious side, and they're promising that, like, you know, that Tony's going to bring out the side of Diana that Diana wants to bring out of her. But it is, you know, it's not. I don't think you know, the roles really haven't been established here. I don't think, and Diana, as I mentioned, like does. She has this very, you know, she's got this body language and, like, this, you know, this cockiness and this attitude she carries herself with where, you know, taunting, just the way she conducts herself. It's very heelish. And if she's supposed to be the person people are rooting for in this feud, like, I really don't get that. But, of course, you know, we may be heading for an entire reset of things in 4 weeks when they're building a whole show in Boston around, like, you know, the Mercedes debut. And so, you know, 4 weeks out from that, I mean, we could just be resetting everything. But at this moment, like, I'm not sure what they're going for with, like, the dynamics between Tony and Diana. And I'll also say with, like, that, you know, still tonight, like, you know, the Willow Nightingale Sky Blue match, it still felt like the women's division were in the least important segments of the show. So I'm very interested to see how that's going to play out starting 4 weeks from now. But that's my final thought. You guys can follow up on that.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Yeah, so Javier, first, were you surprised at how little they, if at all, they promoted Tony Khan's announcement last week?
Yeah, well... That is true because we're 4 weeks away.
But why not? Like, I mean, yeah. I guess you wanted the ticket sale launch to find out what it would do, and now you want people focused on Revolution, not what comes after. So, I mean, I guess. I understand the strategy, but it feels like a momentum breaker a bit. If it's this big announcement that's going to change the course of things and all that. I mean, I think Excalibur or Shivani, one of them talked about, you know, yeah, this is going to be, you know, a real big night or something. I think there was some passing reference to it, but. That was about it. So I don't even know what you would do other than I think for people who didn't want, you can sort of do it under the guise if you missed it last week. You know, Tony Khan made this big announcement, talk about, you know, brag about the ticket sales, frame it in a way that makes it seem like a hot show and try to get a second surge of ticket sales. But I don't know. It feels like some lost momentum. If you say it's a big deal, I think you have to treat it as a big deal after the ticket sale launch also and not go, well, now we got the ticket sales, so now we're going to move on or, you know, move over to this pay-per-view and focus on that in the meantime. I think there was a way to get keep the momentum going a little bit without overly focusing on it, I guess.
One second. It just feels like this happens often to AEW when they've got, like, too many stuff coming up, bunched up together, that something kind of, like, falls between the I would say they're doing like what they did with Jade, where you know they made in WWE, where they made a huge huge announcement and stuff like that, and then you didn't hear about her for a long time until you know you got the pop there. I mean, I'm wondering if that's the idea is not really give you the hard sell because you have the pay-per-view coming you know first, and like how are you going to really announce matches for that if you're going to have matches there that are going to be spinning off of the pay-per-view. Has anyone talked about the possibility of it not only being Sasha Banks but also Kazuchika Okada, since you know he also has the money theme? Okay.
Yep.
I hadn't heard too much of that. So
yeah, I don't think it was. I mean, I don't listen to everything or read everything online, but that's been brought up and talked about here.
Well, I mean, I'm talking particularly Yuga, particularly the Tori.
It came up.
Okay.
In the dollar sign, I think we had an email or a caller. Bring up the dollar sign aspect of you know raining money and stuff. So
So I wouldn't be surprised because I mean if you're selling like Mercedes as the number one thing in the story, then Okada becomes a nice surprise. You know, like you know, oh my God, I wasn't you know for a lot of people who are not listening to the torch right now would say, oh yeah, you know that makes sense too.
Yeah. Yeah,
and by the way, there's for the people who haven't seen it, there is also a built-in story for that because during one of the, I'm pretty sure it was one of the American shows, Mercedes and Okada posed together, you know, in the ring, so they have a lead-in to having both of them on that show too. So if Okada is going to be debuting the same day,
I forget. Anything else about what Greg had to say about Toni Storm and Women's Division and the stuff you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is the women's division only feels like there's only, like, one important story and sometimes a second one if you get lucky. The thing going on with Stokely and his I'd be surprised if he hasn't called them his angels yet, knowing Stokely Hathaway. You know, with Willow and, Alien Girl, Chris Statlander. You know, and that stuff is just it that part of the story and the Julie, you know, well, not the Julie Hart, the Sky Blue stuff, that's just not doing it for me. And that's, I think, probably your second biggest story. Instead of, like, you know, doing something with Thunder Rosa, who still has people who like her, Hikaru Shida, who's, like, you know, she's almost like your Moxley, break glass in case of emergency, know, when you need a challenger. I do like what they're doing with Purrazzo and Toni Storm thus far. Made it personal. In terms of her, I mean, she's a self-proclaimed virtuosa. That kind of screams heel at you until you get to the point where, you know, you're like, okay, she deserves that, so we're going to, you know, cheer her on.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Got a bunch of email. I want to get some of these in here. First of all, I'll save that. Let's go to Zach. Sometimes we end with Zach. We'll start with Zach here in the email. Zach in Texas says, another strong episode of Dynamite. Texas did me proud again with their energy all night. I have to shout out Toni Storm's off the top, sucking on my teeth of talent. That was a line of the night. Toni getting a dagger tattoo through her duck tattoo was a nice touch. Just like I predicted in my feud tracker at PW Torch, Deonna reacted immediately after and kept it short and sweet. Swerve Joe and Hangman had a very good segment. They each played their roles perfectly. Hang Magnum as a heel is going to work well. Reference to Magnum TA with a mustache. Initially, I was perplexed by the finish of the Copeland-Garcia match, but if Tony Khan plays it right, it could be a brilliant idea. Copeland was taken out, which leaves Garcia as a sole challenger. Garcia gets the biggest win of his career, beating Christian at Revolution. Copeland can return after the pay-per-view and get his revenge on Christian without a title in the mix. Everyone gets over. And the Bucks being disingenuous jerks, but not being so over the top works better. Darby reading them for filth in his promo is fantastic. He just keeps getting better with a mic in his hand. Last question, Ospreay beating Takeshita, a Metzger candidate, is going to get him jumped out of the Don Callis family, right? So a couple things there. Let's start with your thoughts on Copeland-Garcia, a pretty lengthy match to end with just a no contest run-in. How do you feel about that as in the context that it happened? I don't think there should be a hard and fast rule that every match has to end clean. And if it doesn't, it's an affront to people's investment in the match. That said, you don't want it to be ever a crutch because it comes across as if you don't want to do a finish. That's where I think people get most upset and ought to, is you're not brave enough to just book a finish. So, yeah, just talk about that segment, and what do you think about Zach's framing of it with, you know, setting up Garcia against Christian Revolution to save Copeland for later?
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, Wade, because my notes say that this was an affront to my investment in the match.
Fair enough, yeah.
No, I'm exaggerating, but it did cross my mind when you invest that much time into a match and then you end up this, again, as a way to play with the rankings in the same way that sort of happened with the draw or what happened in WWE when Roman Reigns ruined the number one contender match, which got him into the four-way in the last pay-per-view. So you just had this stuff happen in rapid succession. They do a lot of, you know, fake finishes with either roll-ups and stuff like that. And what are you really defending? I mean, I don't think it's to I will say I don't think it's to defend Garcia necessarily. You know, to protect mm-hmm. him from taking a loss. And I don't think that. I mean, it's Copeland. But it was to basically say, oh, look what a D-bag this guy is. And, you know, and I mean, and people were, you know, the crowd was, you know, eating, you know, booing Christian out of the stand because Christian does, you know, great job. But you could have gotten the same thing with a Copeland clean win on Garcia. They shake hands and then stage the attack afterwards. Cause you know, what are you really saving Garcia? You know, you control the rankings. You could say, hey, he lost to the number three guy. He's not going to drop into the 40s, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There should be a logic to that, but unfortunately they don't really have any kind of established structure and criteria. So it's just a loss is the end of the world, as opposed to a loss against somebody ranked higher than you is no shame. You know, I mean, if the top two teams in the NFL play each other, one wins, one loses, it doesn't mean, well, now the team that lost sucks.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so Zach also brought up, well, I guess I'll bring up the Ospreay-Takeshita match that Don Callis created. What do you make of that?
Tony Khan really wants to see Konosuke Takeshita and Will Ospreay wrestle, and somehow they ended on the same team, same faction, so we'll just go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
maybe it does end up with Ospreay getting kicked out and separating from it, or I wouldn't kick out Takeshita. Maybe something will come out of it, but heading into it, it's just two people that Tony Khan wants to see wrestle.
So do you think it – well, I'll read JB had a bunch of questions, but I'll relay a question from JB from Detroit. It says, with Don Callis announcing Ospreay versus Takeshita at Revolution, could we be seeing an Ospreay re-debuting in AEW as a babyface? Callis still referred to him as a family member tonight, but with his style and the likely headwind that AEW will have at getting him booed by the Bellwether fans, I could see him being positioned as a top face. That makes even more sense with the idea that Tony Khan might have Ospreay penciled in for winning the AEW title in his home country at All In August. We've also seen that Callis has no problem turning on his family members who go away for a while, as proven by Sammy Guevara. I did see that as an issue with All In if they wanted Ospreay to win the title. And with if Joe keeps the title due to Swerve, you know, against Swerve and Hangman at Revolution, I still think he's a good heel opponent for Ospreay. They're going to have a good match. Joe will be a long-term champion by then. It won't be a transitional champion. You're not sacrificing Hangman or Swerve to Ospreay in a complicated situation where either Swerve's a babyface in the U.S., but he's booed at All In against Ospreay, who comes to the United States, and then he's a heel, but he's, you know, sort of Bret Hart Canada thing. To me, that just gets more convoluted than you want, especially when you're establishing somebody new to the audience, AW audience. Some have a familiarity with him, obviously, but others don't, or it's, you know, just here and there. And so I think a consistent presentation, especially in that setting, of him as a babyface makes more sense. So I like the idea of Joe keeping the title till All In and Ospreay as a babyface winning it, but feuding with the Don Callis family in the meantime. And that also gives Ospreay a chance to work with Powerhouse Hobbs in addition to Takeshita, which can help elevate Hobbs. And I think you want Ospreay to not just have dream matches against, you know, established top-tier workers, but work with some AEW regulars and tell good stories. So anyway, those are my thoughts, Javier. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest concern with Ospreay is that if he ends up sort of in the same area where Moxley is, where it's still like, you know, you got Moxley who's over with the crowd and for the most part a babyface, does heelish stuff, people either boo it, sometimes don't, and doesn't feel like the company is basically trying to decide one way or the other how you're supposed to feel about Moxley. Bryan Danielson's the same thing, pretty much the entire BCC, with the exception of the, you know, little bleep, Wheeler Yuta. You know, so that is my concern, because Ospreay in New Japan would sometimes wrestle one match or one feud or one, you know, story as a, you know, heelish, and then another one babyface-ish. So I'm concerned that that might be the way that they go. I think that, yeah, just if your goal is to get to All In, you're going to get the welcome to AEW, you know, face, you know, thing, and then just ride that until Elite, and then All In, and then at that point, make your decision whether you're going to keep him as a babyface if it's going well or going heel, because I think he does well in both roles.
Yeah. Talk about Okada for a second. You brought him up, perhaps showing up in Boston. We're talking about Ospreay here, Don Callis family, new acquisitions. All these kind of lead to how do you utilize Okada, and how do you feel about his signing? Rich Fan and I talked at length about Okada in AEW on the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade, yesterday. Curious for your take on this and just your excitement about him signing with AEW, or disappointment that it's not in WWE.
I'm actually mildly disappointed because mainly for the stuff that you've said. I didn't listen to the Rich Swan one yet. That'll be for tomorrow at work. So I don't know what you discussed, but you've said several times that you wanted to see what he can do in the WWE in that environment.
My argument was both are going to be great, so I'm not going to be disappointed, but I was more intrigued with WWE taking somebody of his talent and stature. In stature, literally and figuratively, reputation-wise, but also just size and fitting in with the WWE main event scene. I just thought that would be more novel, and I would feel bad. There'd be a sense of loss either way, but the sense of loss of not seeing what WWE's machine would do with someone like him, with Triple H, not Vince McMahon, in charge, was ultimately had me leaning towards arguing that would be more interesting for people who are not brand loyal. Specifically, that, you know, just like open to both, and I feel I come from that perspective. But that said, I mean, once decision's made, then it's pretty exciting to imagine all the possibilities. But also, you know, a little bit of nervousness: is Tony Khan just going to treat him as if everybody watching knows everything about him, and it's just a matter of putting him in 5-star matches every chance he gets? Or, as I argued with Rich, this is a chance for Tony to expand his booking with Okada and make AEW a company built around Okada and tell Okada's story and have everything revolve around him and treat him as something bigger than they did with Kenny, or that they I guess they tried to do it with Punk. They didn't really try to do it with Cole or Danielson. They did it a bit with Moxley, but like even elevate beyond that, just make him the guy. And so I'm intrigued, but, you know, I just don't know what Tony's plans are for him. So, Javier.
Yeah, the intrigue with WWE is what I have on that side of the scales. I'm a little bit more negative in the AEW because based on how he's booked, I mean, you had Takeshita beat Kenny Omega, and then he was on Rampage and Collision, probably just Rampage for a while. You know, until they decided to bring him back up. He had disappeared from my TV anyway, because I don't watch Rampage. But, you know, so I'm more concerned that there's more fraught with danger. If they put him, like, the top program and build around him, yes. But if he's just going to be another one of number 1 through 5 to challenge one of, you know, champions 1 through 4, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, look where Jay White is at, the plus side on Jay White is that he's someone who could go and do something like that, cool his heels, and then he could talk himself back up into something. But, you know, I think there, if you build a company around Okada or like Okada and like his opponents, like I know we've seen it to death, and that's the other thing is, you know, with Ospreay being there, we're going to definitely probably end up seeing them cross paths a few more times. Because that's been a long-running thing between the two of them. You know, and then I know he's going to want to go back to Kenny Omega. But I'm worried that, like, we're not going to get some of the other stuff that we get. You know what I mean? So that's kind of thing. I mean, I'm excited. I kind of feel down, but I always like seeing at the, you know, the opposite side of where I'm actually really am to keep myself whelmed. So I mean, but you know, good possibilities, but tempered with what we've seen in the past.
Yeah. All right, very good. Let's I'll come back to email in a moment, but let's bring Keith from Virginia on here. Keith, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah. Hey, guys, and you're having a great show. I just wanted to say that from the beginning. I listened to you and Rich talk about Okada, and I was, you know, nodding along the whole time. So when I hear that Okada's facing Ospreay, I just let out a huge sigh because I know these guys are supposed to be a big deal, but I don't watch New Japan. So I don't know why I'm supposed to be excited about two guys I don't know facing each other to have a quote-unquote great match. It's just so wrong-headed, and I just don't get it. But I mean, I get it, but I don't agree with it, if you put it that way. I want to know who these guys are, what their mission statement is, what they're trying to get across before they face each other for what I'm told is the third or fourth time. I don't understand that. And then I have something about Mercedes Moné after that. But I wonder what you guys' thoughts are on that.
Javier, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, I mean, you would basically need – I mean, you could get people excited if you do one of those I'm going to go way back. I know they've done it since, but I'm going to go to the beginnings when they got you excited for Spears when he wrestled Cody. Made you think that Spears was actually somebody who is, you know – more than what Spears is, you know, made you excited for that. And that was just based on the videos that they did setting that stuff up. If they were to do that with Okada, there is a lot of history they can mine there. With Ospreay coming in when he was young, and he was the one who – Okada was the one who recommended Ospreay to supposedly to the New Japan brass to get him signed. They were in the same – faction until Ospreay betrayed Okada. So there's a story there, and in a really, you know, which you could really get people into. You need to tell that story and hope that in a very cool video impresses stuff. But I think you need to first establish Ospreay or establish Okada with the fans, because I think if you just were to do this, like, because my worry is that's the match that they want for All In, you know.
Yeah.
That's my worry. So instead of, like, you know, because I would love to see Ospreay Samoa Joe main event at All In, and I think that, you know, that'd be great. You put that in my head, Wade, so if I don't get that, I'm going to be blaming you for disappointment. But yeah, that's, you know, but I don't know if Tony God has got the discipline to not whip out his two favorite toys and slam them into each other. That's my concern. So, because I would think that those two guys are going to be his top two guys.
Well put. Keith, back to you. You can respond to that or bring up Mercedes now.
Yeah, that was a good example of just taking your toys. Like you get a Transformers toy and you get a G.I. Joe toy and you just throw them at each other. So with Mercedes Moné, you know, if I'm trying to put myself in her shoes, I can see myself sitting in there being jittery, like, do I reach for my phone? I feel like texting Tony because I am so nervous because this guy has no idea what he's doing. I'm like, should I complain? I know my reputation is that I'm a bit of a complainer. So maybe I shouldn't say anything this early, but I'm looking at the landscape. I'm like, who am I going to face? Am I going to face Toni Storm, who's supposed to be a heel, but, you know, she's very entertaining and everybody likes her? Or who's number two? Who's number three? well, who's number four? Who am I supposed to? But, you know, maybe it's too early to be complaining. I'm getting paid a lot. So that's what would be going through my mind if I was her, because I feel like it's going to be a disaster. I think she's going to come in and it's going to come off like a big-ish deal, kind of like Adam Copeland, and then it's going to quickly fall apart. And I would be trying to set the table for this whole thing ahead of time without seeming needy or like a prima donna, you know? So who do you think she faces? Who's the right person for her to go against if she's going to come in as a baby face, I assume? What do you guys mm-hmm. think?
Javier, I talked a bit about it last week on a few shows. What do you – I want to get your take on it. I'll bounce off it. But I think, yeah, Keith brings up some pertinent points.
Well, I don't know where she's been, what her situation is, what her relationship with the company is currently. Mm-hmm. But my first choice would probably be Britt Baker. Have Britt Baker come out and rain on her parade. That would be because everybody else, like the Toni Storm, seems like is eventually heading towards the Mariah May thing, unless they decide to swerve away from that. I could also see Hikaru Shida be an opponent for her. But then you do have somewhat of an issue, that would be something like, okay, we're just going to book this match as opposed to build a story towards it. Maybe Thunder Rosa, but Thunder Rosa is over too. And, you know, again, I don't know what like her relationship with the company is, they did not really sell her coming back as much as, you would think. So yeah, I mean, and then like Sky Blue's your number four. So that's your top five women. Julia Hart is, those are your – I mean, that might be what they do, have her go up against Julia Hart, win the TBS title, because for them the titles are weighted the same, and she's the TBS champion.
That sounded like a question, and I missed it. Say that again, Javier.
No, I was saying that maybe she wins the TBS title from Julia Hart, and because, AEW kind of ranks both of the belts equally, and she's the TBS champion, while Toni Storm is the women's champion, so –
How big of a star is Mercedes relative to other AEW acquisitions? Like, who do you put her right above and right below?
Right now?
Just an AEW history based on her coming in next month.
Yeah, I mean, above the idea of Saraya and Ruby Riott and above Toni Storm and, she'd probably be like, when Britt Baker was at her hottest, I would put her right behind her when she was like, the fifth pillar, right? Outside of that, but like right behind her. And then, which is probably why I brought her up and why she was to mine. But yeah, I mean, she'd probably be the hottest woman that they, that they would bring in. I don't know, now if you were compared to men, I'd probably put her on the same, like as Adam Cole, maybe.
Yeah, I think
not a Punk, because I've heard some people complain about Punk, and I'm like, no, not Punk, but maybe like an Adam Cole. That is really cool, and then let's see what we do with them.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit above Adam. Well, I think it's above Adam Cole just because of the national TV experience, WrestleMania main event, WrestleMania history, all that. But I get what you're saying, and I mean I put her between Cole and Punk. I'm trying to think if there's somebody else, if there would be someone even closer to her on both sides of that.
Danielson.
Yeah, I think Danielson might be a good, I don't know if it'd be a little higher or a little lower. But interesting. Yeah, it'd be interesting what people would think of that if you listed, here's 12 acquisitions post-Moxley, post-Jericho, in the early, early days. And where do you rank her? Because if Tony's thinking she's going to be, CM Punk, I mean, obviously she's more than Saraya, and more than Toni Storm, people with other WWE exposure. But in terms of the really top tier names, she's not at the, she's not at the Punk level. But I'm trying to think who do you think she's, who else is above her who they've acquired post the initial kind of launch era with Jericho and Moxley, along with the initial core of Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks?
Well, I mean, I do like the Danielson thing, because Danielson was the second punch to the first punch that was the CM Punk story. So, like, on that level, like, she's a second punch. Like, wow, this is really cool to have when you know. So, yeah, that's kind of where I would have her. And again, it also depends on what they're going to do with her and what are the women that are around her. And that's kind of the problem with AEW. They only have essentially two stories going on at once, and one of them is usually not even on Dynamite. So, yeah.
Keith, what do you think?
I like the Britt Baker idea a lot. The only problem I have is that Britt has this this tendency to, when she gets on the mic, to undercut the person that she's going against. And I feel like that's something they do not need when Mercedes comes in, from a business standpoint or from a, you know, locker room standpoint, because I think that could get ugly real quick. Thunder Rosa was on the receiving end of that, and I don't think she ever recovered. And I think it went the same way with Saraya. So somebody's going to need to talk to her and get everybody on the same page with that. And that's basically all I got, guys. Thanks.
All right, cool. Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to our on-site correspondent, Brian, calling from Texas, who attended tonight. Brian, welcome.
How's it going, guys?
Good to talk to you.
Yeah,
how was the show?
I'll obviously have to go watch it back on TV, but had a great show. Like, quote Tony Khan, it was a great show. how to come off television, because this crowd was pretty much up for everything all night.
Yeah, like, I was watching some segments and thinking, I don't know if that did a ton for me, but crowd was into it, or that was pretty good, but it sure seemed like the crowd was into it. Like, I felt that multiple times, even though the main event, like, it's not my favorite style match. It feels kind of like geek show garbage wrestling from another era that just, you know, Tony Khan gets off on every now and then, you know, to put in the main event spot when you have, because it explains why I put in the main event. I mean, Taven and Orange Cassidy does not belong as a Dynamite main event, especially with the complete lack of build and hype. But if you're going to do that style of match, well, now it makes sense. You can't do that match, in the halfway through the first hour and expect people to follow it. So, Javier, how do you characterize Dynamite tonight? I didn't come across. It came across as a little bit of a letdown from last week with some of the things that they did, and obviously it's not what they're building to for Boston. But it wasn't. I don't know if maintenance show is the right word for it either, because you know the content overall was good. I mean, Moxley and Dax, you know, 18 minutes of good action. Copeland Garcia, 13 minutes of good action with a non-finish. Young Bucks and Top Flight gave you 11 minutes of good action. I mean, those are the three highlights leading into the apparatus-filled, blood-filled main event. Javier, how do you characterize the show?
Yeah, I mean, I was fine with it just watching it, kind of like how you're feeling it watching it. But it did cross my mind the thing of, like, this would be a match, which is what Tony Khan kind of books for, is, you know, this would be a match that would be fun to watch, you know, their live. You know, so, like, you know, really get into actually seeing the people doing this stuff and not through your TV. I probably would have been disappointed when I saw the main event was Cassidy and Taven. But that would be tempered with the fact that it was a death match, and whether it was a good death match, that would have determined, like, overall my experience there. I liked it for the most part. It seemed like a show that had I attended, I would have enjoyed more than just watching it on TV.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Brian, talk about what you enjoyed about the show in person.
Honestly, Wade, like, I actually, one of my, I loved the promo segment from Darby. I thought that was probably one of his best delivered promos. I know sometimes people give him criticism as far as his mic work goes, but I thought that was actually pretty good stuff from him. And the Wet Ink vignette from Toni Storm, I think she's doing tremendous work right now. I think a lot of people in, you know, good faith have criticized a lot of the build in the women's division for, you know, the last 4 years or so, just because there's not really any meat or substance to the story. But they are really doing a good job kind of convincing you there's a lot here to Deonna and Tony potentially Could there be a title change? I mean, they're at least making you question it, where it's not like, oh, we're going to just have champion versus, you know, weekly, you know, challenger. And then obviously, the opener with Dax and Moxley was fantastic. I mean, this Austin crowd specifically, I can't explain what it is because I believe each visit AEW's had, it's been usually around like 3,000. Maybe like the first time they've been to the venue, it was around 4. But usually, because I've gotten questions before saying, is there 5,000 or 6,000 people in there? Just because usually I haven't seen a crowd this into it because if you saw kind of like by ringside, there was this big group about 20 or 30 people just into it, yelling the entire time. Because, you know, you watch crowds nowadays, they're kind of just sitting on their hand and just kind of enjoying stuff happening. But, you know, everybody in the crowd is still having a good time. I don't know if you guys can hear from, because I'm outside of my seat right now, but a lot of people still stayed for this Rampage show, and they're filming some ROH stuff that I'm pretty sure people were going to still stay around. And I'm hoping by the strong kind of Texas performance is hopefully will lead to a Texas pay-per-view eventually, because I think if there's a city or state specifically that's earned a pay-per-view, it's definitely Texas, because I'm hopeful if there's additions to the pay-per-view calendar, I think having a pay-per-view in Texas in general, that would be an easy open goal for Tony.
Talk about who you think was the biggest star of the show based on crowd reaction, or, you know, rank the top 3, 4, 5.
Ooh, I would say Mox and Dax for sure. They, and then 1A or 1B or however you want to rank it. Now I have to question myself now, because I'm just thinking back to that promo segment that I forgot to mention that was actually really good as well. Maybe Swerve, Moxley, Dax, Joe, and then Hangman. And then Orange to follow. Joe, I don't know if you guys have talked about it yet, but Joe was terrific tonight. He came off looking like a megastar. I received a lot of feedback just from friends that were watching the show saying what I saw translated, it sounded like Joe came off looking like a big, big, big deal, and a lot of people seem to be happy he's back in the current title holder, and it seems like, the turn of phrase that AEW has been saying is restore the feeling, and I think Joe being the champion was definitely the right decision to do that.
How receptive were people to Swerve compared to Hangman, just in terms of if you could get any reading on how seriously they took them as a top fan?
Well, it's funny because a lot of people seem to think, AEW was leaning into kind of like Hangman as the heel during their match last weekend. He kind of came off heelish again, and I think he got a good amount of boos. There was not a lot of cheers. To me, watching it live, Swerve was the guy cutting the babyface promo. Joe was kind of like, the cool badass champion, but, Hangman kind of came off a little, kind of like snivelly, whiny, kind of like an old, like an Edge. He kind of gave me those vibes a little bit, where he was just a little whiny and snarky. But the crowd seemed very receptive as Swerve is the next babyface champion, even with Nana in the background. He just no boos, and you can even tell in his cadence. He's I think if you go back to that Collision promo he cut a couple weeks ago, he was not as nasty. He kind of changed it up a little bit. As far as his cadence and delivery, didn't necessarily put down anybody, and that's like kind of a good showing of a future babyface champion, where you don't have to necessarily bury everybody. You can still put over someone, but say, "Hey, I'm still gonna beat you."
Javier, jump in with a question for Brian.
How did the crowd react to the Moxley-Claudio post-match stuff? Because it seemed a bit weird listening to it on TV. Because at first, it kind of seemed like it was like simmering boos when Moxley would not release the hold. and then it kind of felt like sometimes they were when Cash came in to make the save and started beating up on I think it was Moxley, people were doing that. So like how did the Cubs fans feel, like who were they taking in as heels and who were they taking in as faces?
You know, that match, it was really unique because it just like both guys, it was like 50-50 all the way. But then the post match, it really seemed to me the crowd was receptive to Blackpool Combat Club heels, which ultimately, if this is leading to a match to Revolution, which I assume, that's probably the right call. And, you know, honestly, the Blackpool Combat Club kind of like tweener stuff is okay, but it would just be nice to know, hey, do we need to cheer these guys? Do we need to boo them? Like, it's kind of, I guess Danielson can get away with it in a degree, but, like, it's hard. I don't want to boo John Moxley, and I don't think the fans want to either, but when he's going to, you know, choke Dax after the bell and not release the hold, obviously that's going to get the crowd, that's going to turn them around a little bit. But, yeah, they were definitely booing John Moxley and Claudio pretty hard and rooting for FTR during the post-match.
Yeah, I still, Javier, just don't, I just think it's such a headwind to put Moxley and Claudio in that group in a position of acting like heels when fans just want to cheer them. And, but, you know, I mean, like Brian said, you know, you can do something against the right opponent and with the right circumstances, maybe you can elicit some boos, but ultimately fans, like Moxley especially.
Yeah, I mean, their position, that group's position should be, if you're going to keep them in a tweener-ish role, I'm not going to say tweener, like, you know, full tweener, but just have them act as a, you know, babe, you know, like more baby face when they're going up after heels, but for like other baby faces, kind of act as a, you know, be the gatekeepers for other baby faces on their way up, where, you know, you're playing, you're not really healing it up, but you're more like the crotchety old man, you know, trying to keep this guy from rising. And then, like, if you get a good match, you get a good handshake. I mean, sort of how they work the whole Garcia thing and Wheeler Yuta thing into the group, you know?
Yeah, and
yep.
And I don't know how you guys feel. Like, I'm just ready for John Moxley to take that vacation. It's been 2 years. I love Mox. I love John Moxley, but I've seen this in good faith where, you know, just in wrestling, you guys know, like, after about a year and a half to 2 years, it's okay to take a break. Like, you know, it's okay to go away for a couple months. And, you know, I know Moxley, he looks in tremendous shape. It looks like he's just been plugging away in, I guess, the Moxley dungeon at his house because, you know, it looks like he's lost about 15 pounds. But, you know, I would love for him and Renee to finally get that vacation that they've been wanting for 2.5 years now, because I just think it would be refreshing, just because that way, you know, the heart grows fonder when you're gone. Like, make the fans miss you, and the fans desperately want to cheer John Moxley. And I just and he probably just needs to reset too, guys. I mean, Wade, you've been around in this business for a long time. You know, Moxley's never had, when you don't have a break and you're going and going and going, you kind of just, you're spinning your gears and you're kind of just going, I don't want to say Moxley's going through the motions, but like, I don't like that creative Moxley when he first started with the company. It's not there right now, and that's not his fault. It's, you know, it's just been 5 years. It's okay to take a step back and say, you know, hey, maybe this guy's coming in. Maybe this would be a good time to set up a program for All In, you know, just, and take care of yourself and just, you know, and it'll be better for everybody. For Moxley stepping away, that kind of individualized the entire group, and I don't want to say it's time to disband the Blackpool Combat Club, but it's like, you know, it's not as fun as it was, and there's so many other fun things you could be doing with Claudio, Yuta, and, I mean, obviously this is Danielson's last one. There's so many other creative things they could potentially doing, and I just think it's, you know, it'd be a good time for Mox to finally get that vacation, have that non-alcoholic beverage, and, you know, enjoy his time off with his lovely wife and kid.
It worked for Sami Zayn, for instance. You know, he seems fresher having been away for a little bit, coming back. And we had a question about that, I think, on the Fix last week,
you
know, wrestlers taking time off. Is someone saying hello to me, Brian?
Yes. Hold on. There's a run-in. Hold on. Hi, Wade.
Hello.
How are you? This is Cameron Hawkins from The Ringer.
I never heard of him.
Oh, wait. Hi. Well, nice to meet you.
Hey, Cam. Awesome.
Wade, how's it
good
going?
Good to talk to you. Good.
Always.
It's been a while.
It has been too long. Yes, sir. Brian and I went to the show together. It's fantastic. AEW put on a real good show.
Okay. Yeah.
We're saying bye to everyone as we walk out. So, yeah. I gave you all the insight Brian didn't give you because I saw way more stuff than he did. No, I really didn't. It was great.
Well, what did he miss anything of pertinent?
The only thing he missed was some Rampage stuff. They did a 12-man tag. It was the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. And Jeff Jarrett's crew and three other people, I assume. And the Dark Order. There you go. It was a fun match. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang won, and did some fun stuff at the end of the show. I think that's the only thing he actually missed. And now they're doing an ROH taping, and it's going to go till 1 in the morning. And so, yeah. But they are going to have there's going to be a tables match with – for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship between Athena and Nyla Rose. So that should be pretty cool.
Are you sticking around for it?
Absolutely not. We have to work in the morning.
Yeah,
absolutely
yeah.
not. It is 10 p.m., 10:30 on a Wednesday. Absolutely not.
How did AEW feel to you, Cam, as a hot product compared to other times you've attended their shows?
It's almost unfair. We were here when Ricky Starks and MJF had their promo together, which was electric. I was in San Antonio for Jamie Hayter and Sheeta, which is one of the best matches I've seen in person ever. And so this was good. Like, they opened with Dax and Moxley. I thought that was really, really good. They closed with Matt Taven and Orange Cassidy in the Texas Death Match, I thought was really good. I thought it was I really liked Willow and Sky Blue. Like, I thought it was a good show, but those electric moments, I think those are hard to recapture. Again, very good opening, very good closing, but special. I don't know if special is the word, but a good show. I enjoyed the whole thing. So yeah.
Do you like the Bucks new characters?
Absolutely not. and what's interesting? I mean, what I did appreciate were the details, like them coming out in the suit still covered in blood, I think is really, really cool. I think it's way too on the nose their humor was just never really for me. And so it's kind of a situation where this isn't all of a sudden going to be funny. And the conversation that we had with me and these other media and writer people is just like, oh, they're locked in now and they're focused. And I'm like, them being... It's more of what I don't like. That didn't do it for me. But, like, with that said, you still get good top. And so, you know, what they do in the ring is still very good. But no, I'm really not a fan of the characters. That's good.
Anything else you want to pass along, Cam? I don't want to steal too much of Brian's time here.
I'll give you back to Brian. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for jumping in. Good to touch base with you.
That was a hot tag, Wade. So hopefully that went over
yes,
well.
Yes, it was. Totally. That was awesome. So, Bryce, did Tony Khan talk to you guys, and how did that go?
He came out after the Dynamite taping and kind of just went over, Rampage. Just FYI, I'm sure you guys already touched on it, but Rampage will be at a special start time due to the NBA All-Star Game this Friday. So I believe it'll be 6 p.m. Central, 7 Eastern, just for anybody that didn't know. He kind of just went over the cards. He went over how Austin is one of his favorite cities to visit, especially the ATB Center, because obviously there is history with Tony and, the city of Austin in general, and that's why I'm kind of also pounding the table, like, Tony, if you love Texas so much, if we've got all these extra pay-per-views, let's get one going. But, kind of just a normal Tony kind of post show speech, nothing too crazy. And I think Cam kind of summed it up pretty good as well, as far as like the show. Like, I think last week's show obviously was a little bit more special because, I mean, well, you're getting Sting winning a title. Like, I mean, that's kind of hard to beat, right? But, yeah, still very good show. I mean, obviously, with these AEW shows in general, if the crowd is having a good time, I think it's going to translate to the product that you guys are watching. But I think overall, still, AEW seems to be getting back in a groove. And obviously, no Collision this week. For anybody that was wondering, so I'm sure the guys and gals will be looking forward to that. But can I actually give you a Rampage spoiler, Wade? Yeah, would you like one?
Yeah, yeah. I am totally fine with Rampage spoiler, but just good to give people warning. So they've been warned.
Yes. This is a Rampage spoiler, so if you don't want to listen, turn off for a second. So we had a win. Our first win on AEW television for Queen Aminata. Wade, can you believe that?
Yay.
Title shot incoming.
Maybe, but I was actually kind of wondering. I was like, all right, so are we getting an All Elite graphic for Queen Aminata? I was thinking about it, but no graphic, but still very over the crowd. So very happy to see. I believe she actually pinned Anna Jay with a headbutt. Yeah, I think it was she actually hit her head, really hard-looking headbutt for the 1-2-3 victory. And obviously she hasn't won a match with that move, so it was kind of shocking that she did. So good for her.
Anything else from Rampage?
So Sammy, another spoiler, just FYI for everybody. So Sammy and Jeff Hardy had a pretty insane no DQ match. It was scary towards the end of the match. It looked like Sammy, might have hurt himself, but Doc Samson came and checked on him, and everything seemed to be okay, though. Yeah, he finished the match, and there was like a post-match angle with him and Will Hobbs, so I presume that could be potentially a Revolution-type match that they're building, so we'll see where that goes, because obviously we already know the Don Callis family is kind of busy already. So, and then obviously Cam already went over the main event as well. But and then they were just taping the ROH taping that we are not going to stay for.
Right. Yep. Javier, anything else you want to ask, Brian?
No, I pretty much hit all the stuff.
Cool. Brian, anything else you want to share with us?
No. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. No misses, nothing negative to report on the show. And just really appreciate, probably haven't said enough, Wade, but I just really appreciate working with you, Javier, and everybody on the site, and looking forward to stuff on the website.
Cool. Well, Brian, thank you so much. Great. It's great that you were able to check in with us.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Wade.
Yeah, you bet. All right. Cool. Let's wrap up with some more email questions here, Javier. We'll get back to JB, who says, are we getting the exact same storyline with Edge, Christian, and Daniel Garcia as we are getting with Joe Swerve and Hangman? The one match of the night, I wasn't very sure of what the finish was going to be, ends in chicanery, of course. Will the TNT title match at Revolution be a triple threat? I thought this was more heading towards like Garcia and Copeland uniting than a triple threat match where there'd be animosity between them. What was your take?
Yeah, the confusion might lie is the commentary hit hard the fact that, Garcia can, by beating Edge, can get into the rankings. And, because of the same, it was the same story that they were doing with the Joe thing, that would be why the confusion was there, I think. Because I think, it's easy to make that assumption that we're doing the same story.
Yeah, yeah. All right, number four, the amount of heat that Hangman is getting without even going full-blown heel to this point is great. Once he goes full heel and truly commits, I firmly believe he has the potential to be the number one heel in the company. He comes across as a delusional insinuating that Swerve doesn't deserve to be in the match or deserve Hangman's time. I believe that the Swerve Hangman rivalry is one that can be revisited for years. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's one of the things I mentioned, that like I like it when heels have a warped perception of justice and that sort of thing. The thing is, the stuff that he was saying was like, it was broken. So I couldn't get to where he would make any logical, you know, even as a heel, you know, logical assumptions as to why he would be the actual real contender. And then, you know, he turns to Joe and says, yeah, we don't need him. You know, I'm the real one, number one contender. When he was, that might've worked if he were number one and Swerve were two, but I believe that was the other way around, that Swerve was one and he was two.
Yeah. I just decided not to try to decode that. I didn't want to have to think too hard about it once I realized it wasn't necessarily going to be achievable.
There was going to be no good answers to that one, Wade.
I know. All right, five. No one beats intense Samojo on the mic. Is it arguably the most believable thing in pro wrestling? Yeah, I just love Joe's character. I love Joe's character.
Yeah, I mean, and he, the way he brought it up, because, I mean, he let these people have their say, and then he brought it back to himself, which is, you know, what he should do. He's the champion.
Yes. He says, the Tony Storm movie actually did an excellent job in telling and forwarding the real-life story of Tony and Deanna. I found it very compelling. It was both entertaining and productive. Well, what stood out to you there? Because I think that's there was story there. I mean, yes, Tony is spinning some phrases that, you know, are going to cause people to chuckle. But it did advance the story and put her in the position of being more of the dominant one in their history.
Yeah, talking about, I mean, maybe for some people it might be too insider baseball terminology, calling her, you know, my young girl and, you know, stuff like that. But I think across the idea that she was the one who basically brought her through the business. And yeah, and then just like, you know, really rubbing it in with the alliteration that I know you got a kick out of. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought it was really well done. Some people who are into feet probably also enjoyed it a lot. I'm like, oh, there's some people. I thought it was well done, and it kind of felt, this is like, it might be the first promo where she's actually referring to stuff outside of her like warped little time bubble. Because she's referring about her past, and like it's not like her past was always in this, you know, real dreamscape. So it felt like what we kind of needed to move this up a notch, I think, into the real world.
Yeah, I agree. He also says the Bucks continuously wrestling in the suits full of Darby's blood, changing their entrance music, and just being genuine pricks is really working for me. I want to see Sting and Darby stomp them at Revolution. I understand the criticism of using the EVPs in an actual storyline, but I feel like this might be the case of being the exception to the rule. Is there a way to fix that, by the way? Like, can you just have the announcers just go, you know what, the Bucks were given EVP status because they were sort of co-founders of the movement that led to AEW, but we all know, and they aren't happy about it, that it's just an honorary title. And they've shown themselves not to be locker room leaders. And yes, technically they're EVPs, but when they talk about fining people, that has no teeth. Tony Khan's in charge. Like, I just think they should establish the rule.
I would believe that's probably close to what the situation is. When you watch the early day stuff, you could tell a lot of people were just basically given contracts as EVPs or positions that were just essentially there because it's likely, because it's kind of like how WWE didn't Stephanie have both a contract as a performer and a contract as an executive, and one of them came with benefits, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what I'm assuming the whole EVP status is that they're getting some sort of benefits that would not actually be available, you know, if they didn't have that type of contract. So I'm assuming they're just under two contracts. But that's an assumption. Don't shoot me if I'm wrong.
Yes. So I think Darby bringing up what the Bucks said when they re-signed last year was brilliant, speaking of. It was a great way to get heat on the Bucks for blatantly boneheaded comments at the time, and it makes Darby look like he's actually in tune with the fans and why everyone was originally passionate about AEW.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I touched on with the whole, you know, people already have that perception of the Young Bucks, so might as well, you know, run with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it plays into what you've been saying, that I know you and Todd have locked horns repeatedly over, of the whole that they're not plugged in, and now it's a storyline.
Exactly, yes. should Darby have sat out at least one more week to sell the Bucks' attack from last week? I'm okay with it in this case because he came out with Sting's bat and Sting didn't appear, insinuating that Sting at his age likely took the worst of the beating. Yeah, what do you think about that? Sell the beating for another week, or it's fine, it's Darby. My God, we've seen him go through so much.
Nine times out of ten, I would say yeah, but if this is, like you said, this is Darby. I think you feed him into wood chipper and he'd be okay next week.
Yes. Taz had the line of the night when he said they're all annoying people, all of them, when referencing the Bang Bang Scissors Gang. What do you think of this group? I guess what they took on, we heard Jarrett's group in Dark Order. Was that right? In the Rampage taping or whatever, when they talked about having a 12-man tag?
I heard Dark Order. I did not hear who the other people were. So yeah, Jarrett's group makes sense.
Yeah. What do you think of them?
They're going to be making merch money. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not, you could probably get somewhere with it because, I mean, you still have the relationship between the father and the son the sons might be mending, and it might be good for a couple laughs, but I hope it's not too extended. I hope it's more Jay White playing these people to, you know, hey, I'm doing this just for the merchandising money, but when it's time to go, I'm going to slit your throat. That's what I'm kind of hoping for. But I'm not super, you know, I'm not going to say, like, I hate it, but I'm also not super, like, it's not what I'm turning on my TV for.
Yeah, yeah. All right, finally, he says, in what world did the OC versus Matt Taven, or the OC, in what world did Orange Cassidy versus Matt Taven deserve to be a Texas death match? This is a perfect example of having a gimmick match for the sake of having one and watering down all stipulation matches in the process. Someone needs to tell Tony Khan that there isn't a law requiring a death match. Everyone in AEW, every time they run a show in Texas. As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, I mean, Tabby, what's the supposition of why it was a Texas death match?
They've been setting it up for, I believe, either a couple shows or a couple weeks where the Kingdom has been taking out members of the Best Friends. So they took out Chuck Taylor, who was already injured. So they took him out. Then they took out Rocky Romero, I believe in a tweet, because I don't even think that even aired, but it was just mentioned.
Yeah.
And they took out Rocky Romero. And then that was why he, you know, Cassidy had enough. He wanted the match, and he wanted to, you know, get revenge. So, I mean, they did do something, bare minimum, but, like, it's like, hey, you know, I studied for the test, like, you know, 5 minutes before it started. You know, so it's kind of that level of build to it, which played into some of the spots in there. That's why Chucky, the thumbtacks were in a thing by Chucky T, which was his contribution to the match. He couldn't be there because of his injuries. Rocky Romero's contribution went against Orange Cassidy because he got I'm assuming it was like the bottom of Jeff Jarrett's guitar because he got nailed over the head with that. And I did one of the parts that I really popped was when Beretta came out and he did the scene from Terminator 2 where he's carrying the box of roses and then he pulls out a lead pipe out of it, which in Terminator 2 was a shotgun. So I kind of popped for that. I mean, it was stupid because, like, why would you, if you're going to make it safe, why are you coming up with that? But, you know,
yeah.
It was still funny. I mean, and you know, that and that's what's important in an actual Texas death match is that you get good laughs.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's go to Jody in the UK. Enjoyed the show tonight. Looking forward to Revolution as the card builds well. The Young Bucks are off to a good start as obnoxious heels. They need to keep cutting these promos alongside in-ring antics. Yes, and a live in-ring promo from the Young Bucks and Tony Schiavone with a bump of the night. didn't take a lot to knock him down. I actually thought it was really a cool moment when they said, no, we'll help you up, Tony, and he looked suspiciously at them, which he should. And then all of a sudden he realized, oh, crap, I'm in position for a VP trigger. And, you know, that I mean, my God, I was like, they're not really going to give him an EVP trigger. And then Darby runs out. So I thought that was well done. And I like the Bucks being in the middle of the ring. It makes wrestlers who get middle of the ring promos tend to feel like bigger stars. And, you know, there's no net when they're out there, but I think they are kind of getting comfortable in that zone.
I really liked that. What I did not like was the follow-up on commentary, and I'm not going to necessarily blame Tony Schiavone on this because he was basically reading like the stuff that he had to read for the, you know, the promo stuff he has to read, right? And then Taz, being, you know, the smart guy that he is, says, you know, how was that, Tony? You know, this was, you know, dangerous for you. And then Tony's like, oh yeah, that's right, I haven't sold this on commentary yet. And then like he goes, oh yeah, you know, but I'm not going to totally blame Tony on that. Tony Schiavone on that, because it might be that, you know, he had to, you know, go into, I blame more of the actual, you know, layout of the show as opposed to, you know, so that Schiavone mm-hmm. could have a moment to regain himself. Like maybe have Excalibur come in and say, you know, as Tony is gathering himself, this is what you have to look forward to next week, and then do the whatever promo stuff that he had to do.
All right, let's see. Jody also says the crowd lighting was off again tonight. Based on your report, it looked like the arena setup was pretty much full. Light it up and show the crowd, a step back after last week. So they didn't have a big enough crowd to light it up because I don't think they had much in the upper deck. I actually should have asked Brian and Cam about that. But they had an initial wide shot of the ring, the stage, and the floor fans in the lower bowl that looked good. But it also, you know, if they could widen that out and light up the crowd, they would have. So you pretty much know the limits that they were working with. What did you think?
Yeah, that was pretty obvious when Cassie and Taven went into the crowd, and the shots they decided to use were obviously, like, purposely missing areas. And they were very, you know, a lot of them were very tight. Than, you know, so I figured that was what was going on.
Other than that, they need to move the stories ahead more quickly. This is Jody again. The obvious Bullet Club Gold turn on the Acclaimed and whatever is happening with Stokely Hathaway being two clear examples. All four long-form stories, but they drag them out too long again and again. Also, it lacks continuity, given people appear on TV inconsistently and aren't seen for weeks. Thanks, as always, for your coverage. Best wishes. Thank you, Jody, from the UK. I have an issue with, like, Prince Nana. Like, on Collision, he was being a heel and interfering and being obnoxious, and then Wednesday – you know, a few days later, here he is with Swerve, and he's the adorable, lovable, likable, affable, whatever, adorable dancing mascot / pipe man. And it's just like, and Stokely just, yeah, I'm with him on just let's get to the Willow, whatever the payoff for that is. It is dragging on too long. I thought there was something else on the show where I was like, all right, I'm ready to move forward with it. But yeah, Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would less say that it's an issue with storylines going too long than a bigger issue is their pacing of storylines, which means some storylines just take too long to get to the next logical step. Other times they have to rush through a storyline because, oh, crap, our pay-per-view is next week, you know, and like 10 things have to happen in that time span. So it's more of a pacing issue overall, which, you know, that's probably been my biggest complaint of AEW's is pretty much as inception, you know, has been that there's a lot of stories where it just feels like you introduce it and then you don't really touch upon it again. I mean, the Takeshi thing is a perfect example. You had him super hot beating Omega. He should have been wrestling your best people, and instead he was floundering over. I mean, and you know, it's not like other people in the company don't see this, because Callis said that my group is so dominant, no one wants to wrestle them, you know, as cover mm-hmm. for why they haven't been on TV, you know. So at least he's, you know, wise enough to patch that a little bit. But how about we don't have that pothole to begin with?
Well put. Okay, I was trying to think if there's something else to add to that. I don't think there is, so I will move to one of our last. Maybe this will be the last email. We're running long here. I think we had one that just covered exactly what we covered. Bradley in Cleveland said, tonight's main event featured two of your favorites. Orange Cassidy had a huge pop, and Matt Taven won me over after years of hating him by ripping those pockets. I can't believe no one else has ever done that. Simply amazing. I'm now a Melvin. Oh, my God, Bradley. Come on. How do you feel about Taven as a character in AEW? Have they done enough to define him, and does it only work if you've followed his ROH career when he was pushed to the top, and so you can kind of see him as a top guy, even if he wasn't, you know, an iconic ROH top guy? And yeah, so I'll stop there.
Taven is probably one of my greatest shams. I actually like him.
Yeah,
so,
that's fine. Teach their own. I mean,
you know, I when he became champ, I'm like, okay, that's a nice attaboy. I did not think that it was going to be a long-term, you know, solution for ROH, and pretty much wasn't. I do like him. He's just like just there for me a lot, but then every now and then he has something where I'm like, okay, this was fun and I enjoyed this. In a good worker, he's a good hand. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Yeah. I think when you're trying to get the best possible that you can out of, say, Wardlow and Adam Cole in a world title picture, and you have just, you know, guys who have been sort of self-indulgent goofs who are entertaining but not serious people to the average typical AEW viewer, I think. I just don't think it's a great start. I mean, Roderick and Taven and Bennett just, you know, are still not serious people.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where you are on the you know, on the card. That was definitely not a top card kind of, you know, thing. And that was the issue. I mean, I'm not super worried. I'm not feeling Wardlow. So, you know, I think Wardlow's best thing was just, you know, when he was with that run with MJF, where you just want that you're gonna basically replace him with anybody in that kind of situation where he's being, you know, bullied by a, you know, boss kind of character. And then that person would have gotten, you know, over if they had some other skills or looks in his case.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else, Javier, from tonight's show? Have we had too many Wardlow squashes? Someone didn't watch for like a year and a half and they tuned in. They're like, what? This is still happening?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. it serves to keep, again, part of the whole pacing issue. It serves to keep the idea in mind that he's involved. I'm assuming he's probably going to be, maybe he's Joe's next opponent coming out of pay-per-view, and he's going to be like a Dynamite, you know, he's probably going to wrestle. Maybe he wrestles him in the Boston show or something, would be my guess. I think they're going to end up setting him up for a title shot, but not one that really matters, is most likely.
Anything else from the show, Javier?
There wasn't much during the break. So, I mean, just a lot, you know, there's still more bickering back and forth. They kind of do that a lot where, you know, they kind of get quote unquote unprofessional and Taz becomes self deprecating and, you know, take, you know, pot shots at each other. But yeah, that's pretty much what they've been doing. In the first break, they did, make a joke where, cause they talked about the hardest part of the ring thing. Cause there was a spot where, it was a spot where I think Hardwood or Mox, one of them got hit on the apron, but it was the side with the LED board. So they explained, you know, that the LED board is reinforced and all this other stuff. And I think Excalibur said something about, oh, it's 6 inches, you know, it drags the that part of the apron out 6 inches. And then he laughed. It kind of, you know, but then, like, instead of just leaving it there, Taz is like, oh, you know, just, you know, 6 inches is actually, you know, pretty good. And they went into, you know, some innuendos there. So, and then Tony Schiavone said, I want no part of this. So that was about the only exciting part that happened during the commercials, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else you want to bring up before I sign off here? Cool.
I mean, that's about it. So yeah, we're good
to
go.
Good. We will, sign off there. Thank you everybody for, listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Thank you for having me on, Wade. Have a good night.
Yeah. Good to have you on, Javier.